Well, if it isn't my favorite, aliens, ghosts, and robots. Hi there, it's Keith. Hope you're doing good today. Before we get into today's episode, I've got some cool news to share with you. On September 22nd, I'm launching a new show from Alien Ghost Robot called Equinox Anthology. It releases every quarter on the solstices and the equinoxes, and it's an anthology of short science fiction stories, all told by some of the most creative and innovative indie audio fiction creators working out there today. This premiere episode is themed around the word harvest, and if you tune in, you can hear stories from creators like William J. Meyer of The Transposition of Chloe Bronte, Andy Thierfelter of Tapes from Beyond, H.M. Radcliffe of The Madness of Chartreulean, Keir Joe of No Return, Alex Kingsley of Empress of Dust, and Skylar Giordano of Omega Star 7. They're all fantastic stories, and they're all original. And you can find out more by going to alienghostrobot.com/equinox. So, on your podcast app, search for Equinox Anthology and subscribe so you won't miss it. I think it's going to be great. All right, let's get into today's episode. An Invisible Sun by W. Keith Timms. Chapter 8. More than any other place I have seen, the Gateport radiates majesty and grandeur. Like a cathedral or mosque, the Gateport's vast chambers and colonnaded corridors made me feel small and awestruck. Wherever you look, sweeping lines draw the eyes upwards to an impossibly high ceiling, supported by graceful arches. Made of glass or something like it, the elegant vault filtered the harsh sunlight into a haze of silver and gold that caressed the crowd below. Floating amid this radiance were holographic signs, words made of light, directing passengers to immigration, customs, and concourses. Every so often, I caught sight of a ship rising from the ground, its engines burning brightly, and followed its trajectory until it vanished into the sky. But down on the ground, under the heavenly glass, the throng of humanity huddled together, the exhausted, nervous, frustrated, and desperate. There seemed to be no end to them. No one looks happy. I should have felt overwhelmed, drowned by the sound of all the conversation and the constant flow of people, but for some reason I wasn't. There is something strange about this place that softens the noise and keeps people moving. Something else I eventually noticed. Everything was pristinely clean. I slipped my tablet from my satchel to check the flight information again. It hasn't changed since the last time I checked. I had my itinerary. Board a shuttle here and fly to a Shayot Starliner in orbit. The shuttle would remain docked with the Starliner like a mothership for the 8-minute Twine flight to Mars, and then I'd take the same shuttle down to the surface. Total flight time, about 3 hours. 3 hours, and then I would be on another world. 3 hours, and I get to see my friend again, and hopefully get some answers. Clearing security took half an hour. A rigorous and unnerving series of searches, scans, and questions. After, though, I found myself heading toward the concourse entrances, my wheeled luggage behind me, scanning the floating signs for the correct glass corridor that would deliver me to my shuttle gate. People float around me like a river, going in both directions. The voices of the throng washed over me. Corporate liaisons talking in too friendly tones to subdued laborers, an angry executive arguing over departure times, a distraught elderly woman pleading with the security guard and pointing at something in the crowd. A boy darted out from behind a stack of metal boxes and nearly runs me down. His parents chased after him. I jumped back to avoid them and collided with a woman in a pinstriped green pantsuit who stumbled and cursed under her breath.
"Sorry,"
I said, reaching out to help steady her. Her eyes were hidden by dark sunglasses, but she just shook her head and gave me a tight-lipped smile.
"It's okay."
And she continued on her way, reshouldering her satchel and pulling her luggage behind her. I felt bad, though it wasn't entirely my fault. This place is chaotic and glorious. Awe-inspiring and nerve-wracking. I found the gilded archway that led to my concourse and stepped onto a moving sidewalk. Through the beautifully etched glass, cranes hoisted cargo containers out of square hatches in the concrete and loaded them onto trucks. I imagined the vast network of tunnels and warehouses underneath me. I wondered if Mrs. Zinn was down there, insignificant in the maze of machinery, earning some overtime. The moving sidewalk ended, and I stepped off at the interplanetary concourse. The corporate logos of various shuttle services glowed on the walls, but the gold and violet ring of Shayot conquers most of the territory here. Shayot owns every gate and licenses every Twine Drive ship, but it allows shuttle companies to work with them, ferrying passengers to and from their starliners. My passage is on a Carillon Company shuttle, but there is only one name in Lightspeed Travel, and it appeared everywhere you looked, here. The departure lounges reminded me of chapels tucked off the main concourse, with arched entrances and altar-like ticketing desks. I found mine and went in. It was quiet. There were just a handful of other travelers waiting here with their luggage. A young woman in a Carillon uniform occupied the check-in desk. Traveling by Twine Drive is expensive, it's true. Apart from executives or the wealthy, most of the people who ship out work for one of the interplanetary companies like SMSS or Transtar and fly in corporate transports in steerage-like accommodations. Or they take the long road in induced hibernation for a 6-month trip to Mars. Or a year to Jupiter, if the orbits are right. Arriving weak and starving and indebted, shuttle transport is luxurious by contrast. I pulled my luggage up to the agent's desk.
"Hello."
She smiled, looking down at me.
"Good afternoon. Checking in."
She was very neat and put together in her uniform. Her voice was a saccharine chirp.
"Yes." "Okay,"
she said, in a way that suggests to me it's her favorite word, and she gets a lot of practice saying it.
"If you'll just tap your ID on that screen there."
I complied, touching my sliver where indicated. The agent slid her practiced fingers over her own screen, doing whatever bureaucratic ritual was required of her. The smile never left her face.
"Okay. You have just 2 bags today, Dr. Cousins?"
"Yes, just the 2.
"That's great. The flight steward will help you stow those when you get on board." "Okay, that's it. You're all set. Enjoy your flight."
"Thank you. Is the flight on time?"
"Yes, we'll be departing in about 30 minutes.
"All right, thank you."
"You're welcome."
My shuttle waited out on the tarmac, visible through the gold-tinted window. It looked smaller than I expected, maybe large enough for 2 dozen people. It reminded me of a great aluminum bird, its retractable wings folded up along its side. I had half an hour to kill. My stomach simmered with nerves. Not that I didn't have plenty to be nervous about. I felt something wet on my throat. My fingers touched it and came back stained with a little blood. Another lesion had opened. I had to chuckle ruefully at the universe's sense of timing. I did not need another reminder, universe. Thank you very much. Taking my luggage with me, I followed the signs out of the departure lounge and to the public restrooms. There were a few other travelers in the concourse with me, but fortunately it was nowhere near as crowded as the main terminal. No one really paid attention to me. This lesion was an angry zigzag of welts about the size of a fingernail, low on my neck. It had come up in the last couple of days. I had a couple of others on me, too, hidden under my clothes. I staunched the bleeding with a paper towel pressed against the wound until it stopped. In the mirror, I looked gaunt and pale. My clothes were too big. For a moment, Ken Zinn's face seemed to take the place of mine in my reflection. The ghost of futures yet to come. I looked away and affixed an adhesive bandage onto the wound. I carried them with me now, just in case. I ran some water, washed my hands and face, letting the water cool me, if only a little, and only a moment. I was too agitated and restless to sit and wait for my flight. I walked further along, passing the shops selling recharging cables or overpriced sandwiches, to a long stretch of windows that looked out onto the tarmac. It was an enormous, flat field with signal lights and equipment sheds sprouting here and there. In the hazy distance, industrial buildings waited beyond the high fence at the edge of the runways. The heat coming off the concrete distorted the air, and the shuttles and planes just kept arriving and leaving, never ending. So much activity. So much energy. So much toil and treasure to build this place and those machines. The flash of police lights caught my eye. It came from a security checkpoint on the tarmac marked Immigration/Expatriation. A mass of people formed a serpentine line behind it, double-backed upon itself through a corral of chain link. The people in line were dressed poorly, huddled under battered hats and salvaged filter masks. They looked like extended families. Some elderly, some children. Some were lean and desperate-looking men of all nationalities, subdued in the sun. These were not shuttle passengers like I am. They were on the cramped, dangerous road to the heavens, some not by choice, packed tight into cargo ships. The deported, the economically displaced, indentured workers. They carried with them the boxes and bags filled with everything they owned. Mothers cradled crying babies in their arms. Children sat listlessly on the ground in their parents' shadows. The flashing police drones hovered over an argument. Two men shouted at each other and pointed angrily. But I was behind the glass, which was completely soundproof. I couldn't know what they were fighting about. I was insulated in this place from the desperation outside. They made it easy to ignore the human beings out there. Isolation is effortless when you don't pay attention. I was about to turn away from the queue and wander my way back to the departure lounge when I saw her and just froze in place. Sister Lucy was standing in the line outside. I looked twice to be sure. But I have watched that Invisible Sun video about a dozen times in the past week, sifting for clues and understanding. It was her. The hard, sinewy build, the serious eyes, the tight brown ponytail shot through with strands of gray. She was speaking with two men in the line with her. One was in his 50s, lanky and bird-like, with orange-red hair spilling over his head in unruly tangles. His face was deeply wrinkled, giving his ruddy and spotted skin a rubbery quality. I didn't recognize him. The other, though, was the tattooed man from the All Saints Transit Station protest. It took me a moment to recognize him because the tattoos on his face are missing, perhaps covered up with some sort of cosmetics. And despite the heat, He wore a high-collared and long-sleeved shirt, concealing any tattoos there. But he had the same powerful poise and attentive gaze that I remembered. While Lucy and the red-haired man talked, he was keeping watch on the crowd and the tarmac. Why were they here? My first thought was that they were going to do some sort of protest. But what kind of protest could they accomplish in the expatriation line that would be long enough to be effective? And why not somewhere more high profile? Were they going to do something worse, as Detective Wright had suggested? The security in expatriation might be more lax, easier to slip through, but no doubt they would have been checked for weapons or explosives or the like. That wasn't a certainty of safety. The cargo tunnels under the gateport were vast and filled with doors and places to hide. Should I notify someone? Flag down a security officer and say, "What?" They weren't doing anything obviously wrong. They were just talking and waiting along with the rest in line. Moreover, if Evan was somehow involved with them, even tangentially, then would that endanger him further? Or me, for that matter, having to explain myself and my accusations to security? I found myself moving further along the window to get a better view. What were they talking about? Where the window ended was an unmarked door. Might that door give me access to the outside? I shot a quick look around. There were a few people in the concourse, most focused on where they were going or engrossed in their screens. A few workers at various kiosks. No security officers that I saw. Impulsively, I tried the handle of the door. But, of course, it was locked. You'd need an ID sliver or badge, no doubt, to go through. When I looked back through the window, the tattooed man was staring right at me. Our eyes met, and I felt my stomach turn to water. He wouldn't remember saving me from the crowd at All Saints Station, would he? Sister Lucy, noticing his attention on me, turned my way. I caught a sparkle of gold at her throat. Crucifix. I grabbed my luggage and walked swiftly away. I wish I could say I'd kept my cool, projected an air of indifference, but of course I didn't. Stealth and spycraft aren't my forte. None of this was the mystery, the secrecy, the conspiracies. My life as an academic had not prepared me for this, but as much as I felt out of my depth, as much as I found myself sweating as I rushed back to my departure gate, certain that at any moment I'd be confronted, detained, arrested, or worse. Despite all that, I had to know. If I was going to make any sense of things, I had to know. So what were they doing? And where were they going? An Invisible Sun is written, produced, performed, and composed by W. Keith Timms and is a production of Alien Ghost Robot Creative Media. If you're enjoying the story, please tell your friends and family about it and leave stars or reviews on your favorite podcast platforms. I hope you'll join us on our Discord server or sign up for our mailing list so we can stay in touch. Members of our Patreon get to hear future episodes early, plus other cool perks for all our shows. Go to InvisibleSunPod.com for more information.